Chapter 4. A New Book. August 14th came quickly, and Verity celebrated her 16th birthday. There weren't any friends to invite over, but she was used to that. With her dad having been so sick and unpredictable, she could only vaguely remember the last time she'd had friends at her party. "Oh, Mum," she exclaimed, holding up the new clothes she'd just unwrapped. "These are so beautiful, and they're even brand new." "Yes, they're new. You do like the colours and everything." "They're perfect." Kara had always done her best to find good clothing at second-hand stores, but until now, new clothes were simply an unaffordable luxury. There were a few hair scrunchies from Thomas, and they were even the right colour to go with her new outfits. It was quite a step up from his usual gift of chocolate bars and gum. She figured he might have had a little help this time. Nonetheless, she exclaimed, "Oh, thank you, Thomas, this is just what I needed. And look, they even match." "I hope you aren't fussy about translations, Verity," Auntie Judy said apologetically, handing her a rectangular gift wrapped in the most beautiful paper Verity had ever seen. "I always thought a Bible was a Bible. I had no idea there were so many different versions of the Bible. Finally, I asked the sales lady what the difference was. She told me that the original Bible was written in some other languages, I can't remember which, and today there are several English translations to choose from. One that she showed me was authorized by a king hundreds of years ago, and therefore used rather old English. There was another Bible that was a paraphrase, which she said wasn't really very accurate, just someone putting the Bible into his own words. There were several others too, but she personally recommended the New International Version. Apparently, it uses modern language." "I wouldn't know the difference," Verity shrugged as she took the soft cover book out of its wrappings and fingered the gilt edges. "I'm just so happy to have a Bible of my own. Now I can find all the answers to my questions. Thanks, Aunt Judy." Aunt Judy and Kara left for work again early the next morning, promising that tomorrow both Thomas and Verity could come in and work for some pocket money. As soon as they were alone, Thomas spoke up disdainfully. "Why on earth would you ask for a Bible as a birthday present? If you wanted a boring old book for a present, I think you'd at least pick something that made sense." Verity looked up from finishing her breakfast. "There are some questions that are bothering me," she replied, "and I think I'll find the answers in the Bible." "It's just a book of myths and fables. You'll never understand it," Thomas scoffed as he smoothed back his dark curls and headed towards the front door. His words sounded exactly like something her father would have said, and Verity couldn't restrain herself. "You're just like Dad," she sighed, "always putting down religion."
"I am not like Dad!"
Thomas whirled around angrily. "I may not be religious, but I don't go around beating people up." Verity watched him head off dejectedly to the forest. She sighed again, deeply. At home, she could hardly remember seeing Thomas alone, and now out here in the country, he really had no choice. How she hoped he would find at least one good friend at school. Ah, yes, school. Taking her bowl over to the dishwasher, she finished loading the rest of the dishes and turned it on. There were only 2 weeks left before school began. She wanted to get lots of reading done before things got too busy. With Mum and Aunt Judy gone most of the day, and even a couple of evenings each week, she was very happy to have something to do. The list of chores they left her each morning only took about an hour, and then she had to occupy herself until it was time to prepare supper. "I sure hope I can find answers in here," she thought, feeling a little intimidated as she picked up her new book. It really was so huge, and there were many different books inside to make up the whole. "Kings, Chronicles, Psalms, Isaiah," she murmured, flipping through. "Now, where should I start?" she wondered aloud. "I remember hearing a few things about the New Testament. Should I start in Matthew?" "But then," she mused to herself, "with any other book I would start at the very beginning, so maybe that's what I should do." Feeling good about that decision, she grabbed a notebook and pen and headed out to the hill. It was the perfect place for concentration and peace, a place where Thomas wouldn't disturb her. She ran up the pathway. Curiosity and excitement were welling up within her. What would she discover now that she had the opportunity to look at the Bible for herself? After tramping down the long grass, Verity settled comfortably in her nook on the hill. She gazed at the words on the cover. The Holy Bible. She'd read many books before, but none of them had professed they were holy. Was this book really written by God? Did God even exist? If he did he really intend that everyone should read the message that he had written? For a moment she wondered about that as she admired the beauty all around in front of her. She could see across the valley for kilometres, the rolling hills fading off near the horizon in pale blue curves. Green leafy trees below waved gently in the light summer breeze. Up above, in the huge expanse of sapphire blue sky, sharp-eyed hawks flew in wide circles, their tiny eyes looking hundreds of feet below for their next meal. Verity felt fairly confident that there was a god, but she couldn't have proved his existence to anyone else. The very first verse in Genesis began with the statement, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." This is interesting, Verity mused after reading the whole chapter. The Bible begins by claiming that God created the whole world in just 6 days. Is that the very first thing God wants us to know? As she glanced over the chapter again, thinking about what she had learned in school, she felt uneasy. How did evolution fit into this whole picture? Did God start evolution? But no, God said he created the world in 6 days, not millions of years. Did the Bible begin with a lie? Or was evolution a lie? Or was there some other way to see both together? She picked up her notepad. Already she had some questions to jot down. In chapter 2 she read the details of how God had created man out of the dust and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. I wonder when the man got his soul, she thought. Wouldn't that be important for God to explain right at the beginning? She decided to put that question down in her notepad as well. Perhaps she would come across the answers later in another place. Verity carried on reading for a while, wrapped up in the story of Adam and Eve. After they had sinned because a talking serpent had lied to Eve, she wondered why God barred them from eating from the tree of life and living forever. This seemed confusing. In what sense was God worried about Adam and Eve living forever? Was it possible that they could have lived forever on the earth? Or did this refer to the afterlife? Perhaps Adam and Eve didn't even have immortal souls yet. More questions. In chapter 4, Verity was amazed that Cain became the first murderer. He even lied to God. Wow, she thought. God just created the world, and already he needs to make a jail. As a punishment, God sent Cain far away. Reading through chapter 5, she was astonished how long people were living. Is this for real? She wondered. How could people live over 900 years? Over and over in the chapter, it was also recorded that people lived and then they died. Why wasn't anything written about where they went next? When she came to Enoch in the same chapter, she read, "Enoch walked with God. Then he was no more because God took him away." It doesn't say here where God took him to, she puzzled, but I guess it must be heaven. Was Enoch the only good man? Had no one else been taken away? She felt a little unsure about her dad's chances for heaven if Enoch was the only person so far that had been good enough. Verity was quite surprised to find when she came to Genesis chapter 6 that people were so wicked that God had to wipe them all out with a flood and start over again with Noah and his family. Okay, she thought, now these people must be really bad sinners if God wants to destroy them all. So why doesn't God say they are all going to hell? Reading about the rainbow after the flood was surprising. Wow, she thought, I didn't know a rainbow is the symbol of God's promise to never flood the earth again. Until now, I've only thought about the pot of gold at the end, never about a promise from God. Then she remembered her walk around town and the sign about God's promises. Is this what the billboard was referring to? The story of Abram began in chapter 12 and was quite captivating. God must have really liked this man to have made him so many promises, she remarked to herself. Another promise. But why did God say he would give Abram all the land he could see forever? For himself and his descendants. Did this mean Abram would never die, or just that he would keep all the land as long as he lived? Why did God use the word forever? Verity was puzzled again when she came to chapter 20. Abram, now Abraham, was living in Abimelech's land. Why isn't Abraham living in the land God gave him, she wondered. Didn't he like it? She was even more confused in chapter 23. This doesn't make sense. Why would Abraham have to buy land for his wife's grave? Why wouldn't he use the land he was given? She sighed deeply as she looked at the long list of questions she had jotted down. It would be really nice, she said aloud to no one in particular, to have someone I could talk to about all of this. Almost 2 hours had passed, and instead of finding the answer she was looking for, her reading had simply engendered many more questions. And the Bible was such a huge book. Her thoughts were suddenly interrupted by the sound of approaching footsteps. She turned quickly to see who was coming. It was Thomas. He was just as surprised to see her as she was to see him. Tears filled his deep blue eyes, and he held a letter in his hand. "Ah, so this is where you've disappeared to," he muttered, as he turned around to go back to the house. "Thomas, what's wrong?" Verity cried, jumping up and running after him. At first, Thomas wouldn't respond. Verity grabbed his arm. "Thomas, what's the matter? Did you get some bad news?" Instead of speaking, Thomas opened the envelope and pulled out a photo. Verity looked at it. Ken stood by a crystal clear lake with jagged mountains in the background. Verity guessed the photo had been taken at Lake Louise. Instead of a smile, Ken looked downcast. Written across the bottom of the photo in gel marker were the words, "Everything is fantastic, except you're not here." "Oh, Thomas," she said sadly, "I'm so sorry I had to miss out on such a wonderful trip." He pulled his arm away. "Nothing's fair," he exclaimed angrily, picking up a rock and throwing it far into the valley. "I'm supposed to be all happy and thankful that Aunt Judy brought us here, and I'm not. In fact, I hate it. I wish we were back in Saskatchewan. So what if we lived in a run-down shack? At least we had friends. At least I was happy." Verity knew better than to try to reason with him. Thomas knew she didn't feel the same. "Go back to your reading," he shrugged. "I didn't mean to bother you." He could have said those words sincerely, but Verity heard the contempt in his voice. As she watched him trudge off, she wondered what it would take for him to see things differently, or whether he ever would. For quite a while, she just sat on the hill, staring out to the horizon. School started next week, and Thomas certainly didn't seem to be settling in. She struggled to think of what could be done for him. Unfortunately, she didn't get any bright ideas.